The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Well, Lynn Boylan, Sinn Féin MEP for Dublin, is staying with us. I'm joined by Mark Hennessy, Ireland and Britain editor with the Irish Times, and John Cunningham, who is relationship director, Morgan McKinney, and chairman and country director of the Lysis Group. We were just talking before the break about the housing figures and about a bit of a blame game developing as to whether or not the government was misleading in what it says publicly, or whether it was that you can blame Deutsche's analysis or blame internal figures. The blame game continues beyond that, because the Sunday Independent is reporting, thanks to Gabi Gedevskatchet, that cracks are appearing between the coalition parties. And Mark, the first crack relates to what we were talking about, these housing figures and who was responsible for missing it by more than 30%.
Yeah, well, I mean, the tremors around the cracks, I wouldn't get overly excited about. Simon Harris is saying that he had been told by Dara O'Brien, and then quickly adding, and Dara told me in good faith and whatever. So those kind of things are going to be part of the relationship between the politicians for the next while. The more important thing is the issue itself, and the issue of housing, and whether they can actually put some real momentum into creating numbers. And there are very...
It doesn't look like it from what...
No, there are very few signs. And if that continues over a period of time, then the blame game is going to get worse. But these are the kind of issues that this government will fight or die on. And, you know, you looked at the past where Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have been in power with a junior coalition partner who was always possible to blame for the sins of the administration. The Greens took a lot of flack in the past, Labour, the PDs, when they were around. This time around, that's going to be much more difficult to do with a bunch of amorphous independents who are seen locally as being people in their own right rather than people with a party brand name behind them. And to be honest, I still think that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are going to rue the day that they ever made that arrangement with the independents.
Why?
Principally for that reason. I think Sinn Féin and Labour are going to have, particularly those two, are going to have the opportunity to attack this government in a more coherent way, where the blame, where the barbs are going to be seen to be landing on Fianna Fáil and Labour rather than landing
Fianna Fáil on Fine Gael.
Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael rather than landing on the weak third leg of the administration.
The weak third leg of the administration, Labour's experience was getting crushed, as was the Progressive Democrats, as was the Greens. Did they act as a defensive shield for the other main parties, or did they just suffer on their own? As in, did the fact that people blamed the Greens a lot for stuff in the last election benefit Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil, or was it a side issue?
Well, it did. To an extent, they acted as a defensive shield. For Fine Gael, I think the link up with the Greens caused them problems in rural Ireland. But for Fianna Fáil, it was an advantage, because the Greens were a defence, and they were the people that you could blame for things. Whereas I think this time around, that's going to be much more difficult to do, where you have policy X that's controversial, and then you've got 10 independent TDs, all of whom have different relationships with their own local electoral area and local brand. They're going to be much more difficult and much more awkward to hit in those kind of situations.
It seems they're also struggling to some extent with getting everybody off the one hymn sheet, to use that cliche, because the things like the comparison of the Trump administration to Brexit, which I think was made by a Fine Gael politician, Fianna Fáil saying that's not the language we're meant to be using, that completely overblows it, that makes our diplomatic position more difficult. Early days for that kind of internecine conflict, isn't it?
One, it's early days, but also, haven't we got enough troubles to be worrying about now without bringing Trump into the conversation regarding housing, okay? Mm. The bottom line is, you get a sense that anybody with a nose in their face knows what the issues are with regard to housing, whether it's to do with the planning that is not yet resolved, the issue of funding and finance, and the issue of dereliction, okay? So if Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael can't get their head around this in the very short term to fix these things, I believe that they're ultimately bunched. I understand that you could write down, actually between the four of us here, we could write down a plan to probably fix it, but they've been sidelining the real questions, and they're blaming this and blaming that and blaming the other. This business again of being the developers in and kind of waving their finger at them.
Hang on for a second, John. Yeah. We could write down a plan to fix it, but how do we write down a plan that navigates our convoluted system that relates to planning, bureaucracy and all that goes with it? I mean, Sinn Féin wrote down a plan that they believe will fix it. It's 160 odd pages long.
Well, and I'm delighted. That sounds like it's a great, great detail. So no, my point is, the planning issue is one of the biggest issues that's floating around here. And I have yet not found the courage to read the planning bill, okay, which I understand is just appallingly unnavigable and it doesn't give any real solutions. It's very complex, okay? But until they fix the fundamental basics and the issues of funding and finance, okay, this will be talked about forever and a day. And again, what's disappointing in the figures is that, look, you know, remove the emotion and stick with the facts, okay? Who ultimately has been giving the numbers and who failed to deliver on it, okay? And it just leaves a really bad taste in your mouth to think that this stage now, for a sophisticated democratic society, that we can't just get some basic things right. But if they don't fix it now, we're in trouble.
The other issue apparently that is causing problems between the two main coalition partners is the handling of the fallout of Storm Éowyn. Fine Gael being reported as criticising Fianna Fáil because Fianna Fáil put out a press release saying that there was financial support available for people left without power and water, and Fine Gael saying, why didn't you do that 3 days ago when it might have been helpful? Is that another one where the underlying issue is more important than the schism around it? The response to Storm Éowyn, was it as bad as it looks?
100%. It's about the issues. I mean, the last time I was in here doing the papers, we were talking about that we're 10 years waiting for a flood alert system to be put in place for a very small amount of money. So we do need to learn from the fallout of this storm, but it is ridiculous that we don't have flood alert systems, that we don't have storm alert systems that are based on a regional basis rather than the countywide basis, because it can vary very much within one county. But also the fact that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael took 2 weeks off. They voted to take 2 weeks off and not come in and answer questions on the storm. So, I mean,
does that
hugely
matter in terms of state response? Because one of the things that politicians I have heard since time immemorial was, even if we're not in the Dáil, we're still very busy working, whether it be constituency or department or anything else. So does that actually have a material
impact?
Well,
I think if you're somebody whose kidney dialysis machine is cut off and you've got no power and no heating in the house and you're seeing your politicians who are supposed to be leading the country are not there, they're not taking questions on the floor of the Dáil, it does make you feel far more abandoned than you already are in the situation that you're in. Because this is a storm that, as we said, it is unprecedented, but these are going to happen. They're going to be more frequent. They're going to be far more violent storms because of climate change. So we do need to have our resilience built into the grid. We do need to have those proper alert systems and properly funded. And to make sure that, you know, when these outages happen, they can be repaired as quickly as possible.
But
and
you,
saying
that
ESB workers have been doing a fantastic
indeed,
job
and
putting their lives at risk.
Something to the order of, what, a sixth of the population without power. Surely there is a limit to how fast ESB crews can get that back, no matter what you do.
But there are issues around where the placing of the electricity lines and the between forestry, and a lot of the cases it's the private forestry, so people have been encouraged to plant Sitka spruce. They're shallow rooted trees, they're more likely to fall over, and who's responsible for the distances between those trees and the power lines?
Yeah.
That's something that, you know, needs to be looked at going into the future. And the same around grid resilience. Around the 2 years ago, I raised in the Seanad the issue of everybody now using mobile phones and what impact power outages would have on people trying to make 999 calls. We flagged then that in other European countries, the mobile phone masts have batteries built in that allow the system to continue to work for at least up to 30 minutes to an hour. That was flagged 2 years ago. That's not in place, and we have heard people weren't able to make those emergency calls if they needed to. So we all know, can point to all of the things that have went wrong. The issue now is that they don't allow it to happen again, that there is in place a proper plan around how we handle these storms, because they're going to keep coming.
While we're doing the tour de table on issues facing the coalition, Mark, the last of them today is front of the Sunday Times. Lowry faces Dáil grilling on link to disgraced tycoon. And in a subhead that I'm not sure Michael Lowry will love, it describes him as coalition TD urged to explain role in Mansfield scheme.
Yeah, and I think we're probably going to see a lot more of that sort of presentation. And this is a story that Mansfield wanted to convert a disused shopping centre at City West on the outskirts of Dublin into a language school. And Lowry, and it would appear other TDs, were called on to offer support. And Lowry contacted the education minister of the time, Fianna Fáil's Bat O'Keefe, about it. Now, O'Keefe basically knocked it on the head pretty rapidly, it would seem. There's going to be a lot of that kind of stuff coming back. You have the referral of the file to the DPP over the tribunal, like 20-odd years later. That's going to have a lifespan during the course of this government. So people are going to be consistently reminded of the fact that Michael Lowry has a past. And the people who will care about that were probably the people who always cared about it. And a large percentage of the people, particularly in Tipperary, clearly don't care about it.
And he'll top the poll again.
And he'll top the poll again. So, you know, whether I can see what the strategy is, but whether it works or not.
Yeah, but to your previous point about having fig leaves or defensive shields in previous governments, the manner in which the length of the spoon that governments used to sup with Lowry used to be an awful lot longer.
Exactly.
Is it worth the deal they've done for them, do you think? Because, as you say, there will be a rake of this now.
Yeah, there will be. And that's going to be a serious reputational issue. And it's going to be particularly damaging for Micheál Martin at various times, because Micheál has, you know, that clean representation more generally with the public at large and a certain degree of public trust. So that's going to be a problem for them. I'm not quite sure what they can do about it, because, you know, Labour didn't stand up in the coalition talks, contrary to what Ivana says. I just don't believe that they were ever interested in doing a deal. There were very few alternatives from the point.
Did they have to allow him to position himself as kingmaker, though?
They didn't, but I think that had nothing to do with them, because I think by the time the independents came to them, Lowry was the kingmaker. I mean, if you look at how quickly he orchestrated Verona Murphy's move into the Corlos position, you know, frankly, I'm not sure.
But am I naive? Do you not say, look, while we appreciate your coming forward towards us, not in that form, lads, come on your own individually or come as a consensus group, but we can't deal with a man who has been found to have relationships of extraordinary corruption be the leader of this group?
But the difficulty with that is that people in that
breathtaking
group,
I should say.
Yeah, but people in that group would see Lowry as being an operator. They saw him as being useful from their point of view.
But Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael had a choice.
Oh, no, I'm not.
And they didn't make
a
choice. They quite happily went into to talks with and allowed Michael Lowry to be the kingmaker, so to speak. But I mean, and it's interesting because when he was described, I think, his role as disgraceful and insidious in the Moriarty Tribunal, his role in the government talks seems to be the same. Do you know what I mean? He was there, he was pervasive. And even with the
it's a political gift for you and the opposition, though, isn't it?
But even like for the government, they were delighted around the idea of them sitting on the opposition benches during speaking time, because it again created that distance that Lowry, oh, he's over there, he's not, the optics aren't that he sat on the same side as us.
Yeah.
But this is an issue of their own making. They decided, as you said, to go in and talk to them. They should have said, no, sorry, we're not negotiating with Lowry, he's too toxic, we're going to
we'll take four of you on your own and
exactly,
do the deal.
And do a deal with them.
But I'm not convinced that the others would have been prepared to have been picked off like that, because they saw some value in having that kind of semi-corporate brand going in.
But I suppose they didn't try is the issue.
No.
Do you know what I mean? So they didn't call their bluff on it.
Yeah.
And I mean, in around Lowry, and I know what you're saying, that there's people who care about the issues and, you know, those who care still care and those who don't. The fact that there's a file gone, the DPP file, this is now back in the news. Do you mean it is current and a lot more people are going to become familiar with Michael Lowry and with the Moriarty Tribunal and all of those dealings.
But the difference, difference between an independence group on this particular occasion and parties of the past, like the Greens, for instance, is that the smaller party always took the blame. Whereas this time round, there's a danger that, from the Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael's point of view, that Lowry is going to be a problem for them, but not necessarily a problem for himself.
Well, this is the thing, and this, John, you were mentioning about him topping the poll, that the findings of the Moriarty Tribunal in relation to his relationship with Ben Dunn and in relation to him securing the mobile phone licence for Dennis O'Brien, neither of them electorally did him any harm in Tipperary. And the positioning of Kingmaker in the midst of all of this, I would have thought it's a gift for him.
But the fact that we're sitting here this morning and we've already taken up so much time talking about him, his past and everything else, is exactly why you wouldn't want to be associated with him, okay? And the bottom line is, it is quite clear, and again, this whole issue of local politics and name it all better than anything else, okay? You go down to Tipperary and you'd find it hard to find anybody to even criticise any element of what he's ever done. And at the moment, the man is and I suppose it's a bit like that sort of Michael Healy Ray piece about Kerry. Mm. He's been very clever strategically with regard to what he's done, and he's done really good things for his county. And he must be sitting at home thinking, you know, he's like the man in the Emerald City, you know, the glory of it all without all the torture. But the fact that we're talking about him this morning and resurrecting all these things in his past can't be comfortable. Mm-hmm. But again, that's a choice that he made with regard to putting himself forward. And I mean,
surely that injury has been poked at so many times that it has gone leathery. Do you think it gets to him anymore?
Do you know what? I actually think because what's still astonishing is I had somebody yesterday say to me, what was this thing about the license? Okay, what? And they say, well, actually, there was a case and he was found and the... Are you serious? Mm-hmm. And then you've got these kind of calls of a friend of mine living in Dubai and one of the local papers about this convicted criminal supporting this establishment of a government in Ireland. Okay? This was out in the Middle East. Okay, so the notoriety has gone ahead.
Well, we should very clearly separate, obviously, the findings of a tribunal in relation to the mobile phone license analysis, which both he and Dennis O'Brien have rejected as you'd imagine they might, wholeheartedly, and any criminal matters, which were not, of course, the purview of the tribunal. 5316 if you want to get in touch, or 087 1400 106 on WhatsApp. On the interesting story on the front of the Sunday Independent, which is saying that a Fine Gael politician was arrested on his or her hands and knees on O'Connell Street because they were in a position where they were unable to stand when assumes they were inebriated. We will get to the details this break. And I'm joined by John Cunningham, Relationship Director with Morgan McKinney and Chairman and Country Director of Lysis Group, Mark Hennessy, Ireland and Britain Editor of the Irish Times, and Lynn Boylan, Sinn Féin MEP for Dublin. And there is a front page story on the Irish Times saying politician donated €10,000 as part of apology. And this is one of those stories that probably adds to the list of challenges that the coalition, and in this instance Fine Gael, are dealing with. It's significant but not overwhelming. Unfortunately, from their perspective, it connects with the front page of the Sunday Indo. Politician arrested after being found drunk on city street. FG party member also behaved inappropriately to a female staffer. This harkens back to some extent to the Brian Stanley affair, and you, Lynn Boylan, happened to be on the morning that broke on this show. I don't know if it is causation or correlation that your presence begets these kind of stories, but it raises the kind of questions that your party faced. What of the party investigation? What needs to be done in this instance? How tenable is a politician's position if they've been found to do these two things back to back?
Well, I think there are questions for Fine Gael in terms of their internal processes, that the person in question was allowed to contest another election after this incident with the female work colleague.
Albeit an apology given and accepted.
Albeit the apology was given and accepted, but I think there are people who, certainly from reading the reports, that some were not aware of what had happened, and then others were aware. And so in terms of the processes of, you know, if you're... I don't know how they select their candidates, but in Sinn Féin, when candidates' names are brought forward to the Ord Comhairle, there are conversations had, or, do you mean, processes carried out so that people have the full information about the candidates. So I think there are questions for Fine Gael around their processes. I mean, and they were very, very quick to be pointing the finger and shouting at Sinn Féin. But I mean, regardless of
now, let me just say on that again, in their absence, to devil's advocate, they may say, "Well, sure, we may have been on the high moral ground, but we merited that position." A donation of €10,000, according to the Sunday Times, a Fine Gael source quoted as saying that this followed a series of internal party meetings and an apology given to the for the inappropriate behaviour. Surely they could say, "Well, look, what more do you want of somebody? What better recompense?"
Well, look, I think if somebody is giving €10,000 as part of an apology, it's obviously a very serious incident that took place. And that goes back to then the case of this person was then allowed to be on the ballot and elected. And we've seen other candidates during the last general election who also had serious allegations against them that Fine Gael allowed to contest the election. So, I mean, there are definitely questions for Fine Gael around its processes of selecting candidates that have these stories like these in their background.
And of course, this would be a significant enough issue for Fine Gael, Mark, if it stood on its own. But now we discover, according to the Sunday Independent, the same individual arrested on their hands and knees in O'Connell Street.
Yes, and obviously the connection is embarrassing both for the individual and yeah. for the party. And you know, I'm not quite sure how you sort out some of this stuff. I mean, I'm of a generation that worked in Leinster House in the 1990s when politicians on all fours wasn't exactly an irregular occurrence. The place has become positively monastic in the years since.
Can I ask in that I heard stories of politicians being carried out of Leinster House and the Dáil Bar and as a fairly regular thing. That's the case. That was...
Yeah, it wouldn't have been unusual, yeah. It wouldn't have been unusual. But, I mean, it was a very different time, not to justify any of it that was going on. I mean, alcohol was a much more front and centre part of Irish political life, Irish business life, you know, the idea of drinking during the day and all of that sort of thing. Things that, you know, nobody would think would make any sense today. But clearly in this particular case, there is a problem. You always have the issue then when you go as a political party to sort out an issue like this. Sinn Féin had the same problem with Brian Stanley. You're looking at somebody who has a reputation within the party, has an opportunity to run as an independent, has their own individual kind of brand, not just a party brand, it's less so in this particular case. So all of these things never become a clean shot, as it were, where you just say, no, we're not having this, you're gone, close the door, bye-bye, good luck, end of story. There'll always be somebody saying, ah, no, give X or Y or Z.
But if you're the person in question, do you get to the position where you say, you know, the stealing slightly from Oscar Wilde about losing one and losing the other. If it was merely one scandal where you've apologised and get over it, if a week later you're found on your hands and knees in O'Connell Street, does it come the point where you say, look, I'm going to step quietly away?
That's not really part of the Irish political culture. You know, you usually have to crowbar people out of the place.
John?
But I think Lynn's point is ultimately, I mean, one, the fact we're talking about this poor individual is waking up this morning and there's lots of people who know who it is, we don't, okay, and it must be really, really a traumatic time for this person, and we don't know what the circumstances are. Back to Lynn's point, what's the process? What's happened? What are the rules? Show me the facts and then a decision is made. So from my perspective at this stage now that, you know, remove the emotion, stick with the facts, let's get the information, understand the process of investigation, and then whatever the outcome is, hopefully they'll make the right decision. But at the moment, it just feels like there's just 120 unanswered questions.
Can your political career survive that, though? Even if you are having a tough time, even if there are a whole series of mitigating factors around it, is it difficult to go to the doorsteps with that hanging over you at the next election? I'm the guy who did X.
I was going to say, ask Michael Lowry, okay?
No.
Not that he was caught on his hands and knees anywhere, but the point is that quite clearly in the countries of Ireland, and it comes with that whole political melee, okay, there are absolutely ways in which people like that can rehabilitate themselves and engage. But the point again, and we'll come to, I'm sure, about the states, that where's the moral authority? Where's the right and the wrong? Where's doing the right thing, okay? And your point is that if you're sitting at home saying you're that person and you did participate in these things, you'd be kind of saying, I'm going to take control of this myself and I'm going to walk away. No, that's not good to happen.
Well, not according to Mark. I'm going to dig my fingers and teeth into this and cling on as long as I can.
No, I mean, it just isn't the culture. And in many cases, it's not even the expectation. I mean, you look at the number of politicians who have, and particularly at an earlier stage, you know, the number of politicians who were involved in drink driving and all of that kind of stuff. And, you know, they owned up to it and their electorate forgave them. The electorate is quite a forgiving beast as long as you don't come to them as a complete hypocrite. If you come in front of them and say, wasn't they a complete gobshite to do X, Y, or Z, they tend to say, well, so you were, but he'll forgive you.
There but for the grace of God kind of thing.
And there is a touch of there but for the grace of God. The question in this particular case is, did Fine Gael take all the appropriate actions?
Yeah.
I don't know the details of what this individual did to the Oireachtas staffer. It does seem to have been at the lower end of the scale, but lower end can mean different things to different people and all of that. There was a process there, so it wasn't a question of them ignoring it or having to be dragged to deal with it. They did organise a compensation. The person accepted it. But if that person is an Oireachtas staffer, well, would you not accept it if you're going to stay in the place? So all of these things
become more light gets poured into it. It'll be interesting to see.
It's very difficult when you're dealing with personal relationships between people, you know.
Let's go to the business of government then and what it is meant to be delivering for us. The OPW finds itself in, you know, that sort of RTE position where there's been a couple of stories and it's beginning to accrete and you think if this goes on much longer, this is going to form a significant crisis for the organisation. The OPW presided over 300 grand of a bike shed. Was it 300? 400 grand? Mm. It's an expensive bike shed. Mm. They then had the 400,000 euro wall, and that has led to a lot of analysis as to what they're at. The security hood. How much was this? I can't remember.
1.2 million. 1.2 million. It was very nice. Have you seen it? The lovely copper roof.
1.2 million.
1.2 million, yeah.
So the Irish Mail on Sunday has a lead story. OPW spent 50 million euro on contracts that broke state rules, and inside they break down all of the various different pieces of public procurement that broke state rules and how they did it, either being in excess of the advertised amount when it went to procurement, or lasting longer than the procurement period, or being outside what they could procure using one system and using another system, and so on and so forth. Is there any possibility, Lil, that the OPW does an awful lot of procuring for an awful lot of money, and you would expect that some of it, which could add up to very large numbers, might be outside the absolutely standard approach, because that's the reality of how you do business?
I think there are issues within the OPW at the top level is the problem here. And there's a culture that it's, you know, it doesn't matter. It's public money and it's not coming out of our pockets. So therefore, whatever it costs, it costs. And that seems to be the type of culture that's within the OPW. I myself have been raising issues around the OPW for years now, when Minister Patrick O'Donovan was the minister responsible, because the OPW were responsible for killing a number of bats in Emo Court, and nothing ever happened with that. So there is a culture.
In the big scheme of things, is it that significant? Do people care much about bat death?
Well, it's a part of the Habitats Directive, and it is actually a prosecutable offence for disturbing a bat roost.
And they got away with it.
So there is this culture within the OPW that I think definitely needs reform, and that's not to say that those who are the tour guides and the on-the-ground workers within the OPW, some of them are on terrible contracts where they can't progress within their job. It's not their fault. This is about the management, the top level of the OPW.
But I can almost hear people saying, well, this is what happens when you hand what should be done through the private sector over to a large state entity. Things get bureaucratic and expensive, and this goes to the heart of Sinn Féin ideology. Why not just let the private sector at it and contract it out using a small organisation?
Absolutely not. I mean, this is just an example of a minister and successive ministers who've allowed the OPW to have this culture and have not actually intervened and had the proper oversight of what is going on in the OPW. And now as this drip feed is coming out, they're all saying, oh, well, I'll tackle it. It's Boxer Moran now saying, I'll deal with it. They haven't dealt with it. And they haven't dealt with it for years. And that's how it's been allowed to continue and to get away with these sort of procurement contracts.
John, you want to
come? Yeah, I just think that, first of all, the OPW has the most extraordinary budget. It's a huge organisation. They have huge power. And there's been a total lack of transparency for so many of the elements of what they do. Their business is procurement, when you strip it back. So they should be getting it absolutely right all the time. So there is question, though, again, is Boxer Moran going to be the man who's going to shed the light? We'll have to wait and see. But this has been going on for years. And again, there's been a fear of even mentioning the OPW sometimes with regard to the fact that they have this power, and whatever threat that they have over or control they have over other departments, they've got on doing their own thing their own way for an awful long time, and no one would ever contradict them. And I think Lynn made the point that she actually brought a particular case identifying the fact that they'd broken the law and it's been buried and disappeared. So there's an awful lot of work that needs to be done here. They do brilliant work, by the way, and that's really clear. What they've done to protect the infrastructure in Ireland and is phenomenal, but there's a lack of transparency, and let's hope that Boxer Moran now, his great legacy will be not just save the bats, but just shine a light on this. And again, bottom line is, now every penny that any department spends needs to be a belt and braces approach with regard to, is it right, is it transparent, and is it clear? And clearly that doesn't
happen. And it's also the OPW that are responsible for flood defences, so a lot of people don't make that connection. And, you know, and again, there's that attitude of we know best, and yet we're looking at other European countries who have completely changed their mindset around flood prevention and sort of dealing with it upland, making sure you slow the flow. Type flooding.
But they're not immune. I mean, look at Valencia during last summer.
No, I know, but the OPW, the legislation goes back to the 1940s in terms of flood management. And you know, there's huge resistance to even looking at that legislation to reform and make sure it's fit for purpose. So that is the attitude that's just pervasive at the top of the OPW.
I want to pick up on attitudes in state agencies, because the ESB is also still in the crosshairs after the comments made by its chief executive. Just before that, a comment to say, being drunk on O'Connell Street is not a crime, otherwise our jails would be full. I think being inebriated to the point of incapacity in public is illegal in some form, isn't it?
Well, it must be if they
yeah, and there's no charges.
Either a threat to themselves or somebody else potentially.
Another, anyone found on all, and this is an interesting one, anyone found on all fours on the street has a serious alcohol issue, so maybe the headlines should be about this huge issue in Ireland and why the government don't advertise more against the alcohol issue. Well, this is a continuing problem. We get completely fixated on things like road safety, which is what, 180 deaths per annum, and 5,000 people a year die thanks to alcohol. Anyway, let's not get on that high horse. ESB and Storm Éowyn. Yesterday, the minister responsible for sport was on talking to us about the NFL coming to Ireland. Yeah. And I asked him about the ESB chief executive's comments that it would ultimately be consumers who were going to have to pay the price of the storm. Here's what he had to say.
In the height of leaving so many people still without electricity, for somebody who I presume has current at home to come out and say that the consumers will be paying for it, I think was a bit tone deaf, to be honest about it. And I know that when the new Oireachtas committees are up and running, which will probably be next week or the week after next, I'd imagine the CEO of ESB will be invited to come before whatever committee constituted for energy and explain his remarks, because apart from being tone deaf, I think they were extremely insensitive to people in the West and the North West that are still without electricity.
So that's Minister Patrick O'Donovan talking about the comments made by the ESB chief executive. Mark Hennessy, who else is going to pay for it other than consumers and taxpayers?
Well, Patrick O'Donovan is right that the minister, or that the chief executive, was wrong to have said what he said in the way that he said it, and that he was tone deaf. But it doesn't mean that he was wrong in the actual detail of the point, because clearly the consumers pay one way or the other. It's a state grid, so you know the bill comes back on ourselves. And this is going to be a problem for ESB in the future. These kind of storms are going to happen again. They're going to happen more frequently. And this isn't a popular point to say, and I'm from rural Ireland, but there is an issue about the growth in one-off housing. And the more of it that we have, the more electricity poles we're going to need, and the more of them that will be there to be brought down in a storm.
So,
and 1,000 miles of poles went down. That takes time to fix.
Will you accept the unpopular reality that there are only two possible sources for this cash, general exchequer or consumer, and they're more or less the same people, so we're paying for it either way?
Well, there's an issue within the regulator, the CRU, and the job that they're doing in terms of protecting consumers in general. And I mean, again, something that I've been talking about for a long time, because they just accept whatever proposals come in around network charges and transmission charges and never query it. They outsource a lot of their work in terms of the analysis of those reports. But for 13 years, households and small businesses were subsidising large energy users up to the figure of €650 million. That ended in October 2022.
How were they subsidising?
So the network charges were arranged in a way that households and small businesses were paying more to subsidise the large energy users. So there's nothing to stop that network charges being reversed. And those large energy users, which are really putting huge pressure on our grid, should be footing the large chunk of the infrastructure that's required. That can be done by the government overnight. The same with the PSO levy. We haven't heard it being ruled out that those who had no electricity for the last 2 weeks will not be exempt from paying the PSO levy on their electricity bill. The PSO levy is designed in a way that it again disproportionately impacts households. It's a flat regressive fee. So there can be reform of those issues to make sure, I suppose, that those who are using the infrastructure or are using more electricity are paying more than always lumping it onto the households.
Final thing, we don't have time, unfortunately, to get into it in great detail, but just want to get a quick reaction to you. We have a situation across the water in the US where Kanye West has dissolved into racism and anti-Semitism and taking pro-Hitler stances, while Elon Musk takes a break from pulling apart the Department of Treasury to make supportive jokes about him coming apart and heading into Nazism, and rehire overt racists to his team looking at government efficiency. At what point do we give up on the US?
Well, I think I've made the point because I'm the chair of the Palestine delegation in the European Parliament, and obviously the comments that Donald Trump made about Gaza were of huge concern. I'm just back from Cairo, where I met with some of the Gazans who've been displaced from the conflict. And I made the point to the EU, they're at a crossroads now, and Ireland included in this, that we have to decide which side are you on, because they've sort of kept their head down. They've allowed Israel to act with impunity. The same with when it comes to climate action on Donald Trump. So the EU now needs to show that leadership, that I suppose the rule of law, international law, human rights is something that is, you know, must be protected and stood up for. And if they're not prepared to do that, then you will see the continuing rise of the far right in the European Union as well.
Lynn, thank you. Lynn Boylan, Sinn Féin MEP for Dublin. Mark Hennessy, Ireland Britain editor with the Irish Times, and John Cunningham, Relationship Director with Morgan McKinley.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.